If whatever you do.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Turkey's leader has visited the earthquake zone and vows to ensure people will have shelter. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Amid calls for the Turkish government to send more help to the disaster zone, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan toured a tent city in Kahramanmaraş, where people forced from their homes are living. He conceded shortfalls early on in the response, but vowed that no one would be left in the streets. While in the Turkish city of Malatya, says former journalist Özal Pikal, bodies have been placed side by side on the ground, covered in blankets, while rescuers wait for the funeral vehicles to pick them up. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The death toll in Turkey and Syria is reaching 12,000. The World Health Organization chief said on Wednesday his agency is deploying expert legal teams and flights with medical supplies to Turkey after Syria's Monday's devastating earthquake in Turkey as well.
One flight is currently on the way to Istanbul, carrying medical supplies and surgical trauma kits from our logistics hub in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates.
It'll send a high-level delegation to coordinate its response, as well as three flights with medical supplies, according to Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Another official said, quote, the health needs are tremendous. A city bus has crashed into a daycare center north of Montreal, killing two children and injuring six, authorities said. The driver was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. A neighbor who ran to the center in Quebec said she saw children screaming and crying and watched a mother collapse. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky began a tour of Europe on Wednesday in search of better aerial firepower to turn the war against Russia, winning a British pledge to train Ukrainian pilots on advanced NATO fighter jets. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky landed in the United Kingdom on Wednesday, embraced by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak at the airfield. The two then sped to 10 Downing Street to set the tone for the visit.
Mr. Zelensky, do you want British fighter jets next?
Ukraine's desperate need for heavy weapons ahead of an expected Russian winter offensive.
It's a privilege to have you here, Volodymyr. We want to stand by you throughout this conflict and ensure that you're victorious.
Thank you so much, Rishi, for inviting me.
It's a rare trip abroad for the Ukrainian leader in the midst of a war.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. There are heightened fears about foreign entities owning land in the U.S. after the Chinese balloon's voyage over American skies. AP correspondent Rita Follet reports.
Should we roll out the welcome mat or shut the door to a possible threat? In Congress and state houses, the Chinese balloon's journey across the U.S. added traction to concerns about foreign land ownership. Senator John Tester, a Montana Democrat, is sponsoring legislation to include agriculture as a factor in national security decisions allowing foreign real estate investments. In his words, we don't want folks from China owning our farmland. It goes against food security and it goes against national security. I'm Rita Foley.
People living near the scene of a train derailment in the mid-eastern U.S. state of Ohio remain concerned about toxic gases, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Vinyl chloride was slowly released into the air from five derailed cars before crews ignited it to get rid of the highly flammable toxic chemicals in a controlled environment. The fire chief, Keith Drabick, says once the experts, the fire department...
And quite frankly, once I feel safe for my family to return, we will lift that evacuation order and start returning people home.
National Guard members in Ohio are wearing protective gear and taking readings inside homes, basements, and businesses. I'm Ed Donahue.
Residents of Auckland, New Zealand's largest city, are being asked to prepare for further bad weather as a system described as potentially the most serious storm to impact New Zealand this century is forecast to hit in the coming days. The warnings come less than 2 weeks after Auckland was hit by historic levels of rain, which killed four people, caused widespread flooding, landslides, and a cleanup bill in the hundreds of millions of dollars. New Zealand weather forecasters say the cyclone, which most likely became a Category 3, will reach the country Sunday and then Tuesday. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Thursday, February 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the debt toll rises in earthquake-shattered cities of Turkey as anger grows over government's response.
A moment of joy. Rescuers pull a whole family from the rubble in northern Syria.
Allahu Akbar.
More often, bodies are removed.
Ukraine's president presses allies for fighter jets as the European Union meets to discuss war with Russia.
The EU's two-day summit comes ahead of the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and days after top EU officials held a summit with President Zelensky in Kyiv.
And thousands of workers in Colombo, Sri Lanka, protest the recent rise in taxes amid high inflation. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Survivors mourned, awaited news and searched bodies in makeshift morgues on Wednesday as the death toll from the quake that hit Turkey and northern Syria passed 12,000. President Tayyip Erdogan visited the zone as he comes under increasing pressure over the government's response. Lucy Field of Reuters reports.
A moment of joy. Rescuers pull a whole family from the rubble in northern Syria.
Allahu Akbar.
More often, bodies are removed. Thousands more people mourn or wait for news as the toll from the quake that struck southern Turkey and neighbouring Syria rose to more than 11,000 people on Wednesday. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan visited Kahramanmaraş in southern Turkey to see the devastation firsthand, 2 days after disaster struck. Anger is growing over what local people say has been a slow government response. Erdogan has declared a state of emergency in 10 provinces and sent in troops to help.
All state institutions are working on this at the moment. On the first day, we experienced some issues, but then on the second day and today, the situation has been taken under control.
A traumatic search at this nearby sports hall. As survivors step among rows of bodies, examining them one by one. Other makeshift morgues are in stadiums and parking lots. The tremor struck in the dead of night when people were sleeping. Hundreds of collapsed buildings have become tombs, and the toll is expected to rise. In the quake zone, survivors slept in their cars overnight in the freezing cold, or in the streets under blankets. Fearful of going back into buildings shaken by the 7.8 magnitude tremor that hit in the early hours of Monday. Families destroyed or torn apart. In an Aleppo hospital, Bakir says he lost 13 members of his family of 16 when their building collapsed. Only my brother, my 1.5-year-old niece and I got out, he says. Yusuf has waited 2 days for someone to rescue his relatives. His father, mother, sister and her son are under this rubble on an Aleppo street.
I talked to them and heard their voice, but unfortunately, as you can see here, they're very slow at work and they don't have enough equipment.
Aid officials voice particular concern about the situation in Syria. Humanitarian needs are now greater than at any point since a war broke out that has partitioned the nation and is complicating relief efforts. Residents in Syrian government-held territory, contacted by phone, have described the authorities' response as slow, with some areas receiving more help than others.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky pushed for fighter jets to ensure his country's victory over Russia in a dramatic speech before the UK Parliament, where he also thanked the British people for their support since, quote, day one, unquote, of Moscow's invasion. Zelensky is seeking more advanced weapons as Kyiv braces for an expected Russian offensive. This as European Union leaders are to meet Thursday for a summit dominated by migration, the economy and, not surprisingly, Ukraine. Reports suggest President Zelensky may attend the Brussels summit in person. From Paris, Lisa Bryant has more for VOA.
The EU's two-day summit comes ahead of the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and days after top EU officials held a summit with President Zelensky in Kyiv. Besides Western Europe, Ukraine's leader has made only one other known trip outside his homeland since the war, to Washington in December, where he met with President Biden and addressed the U.S. Congress. Zelensky wants several things from the Europeans: to speed up Ukraine's bid to join the EU, more weapons ahead of an expected Russian offensive, and more sanctions against Moscow. Brussels is unlikely to fast-track Kyiv's membership application, but in Kyiv last week, European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen praised Zelensky's commitment to join the bloc.
I must say I'm deeply impressed, and I want to commend you for the preciseness, the quality, and the speed at which you deliver. This is phenomenal.
The Europeans have already committed billions of dollars in defense and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Brussels is also expected to unveil a 10th sanctions package against Moscow later this month. Migration is also set to dominate the summit amid a sharp uptick in economic migrants and asylum seekers arriving in Europe this past year. That's on top of the millions of Ukrainian war refugees. Today, some EU member states are calling for tougher policies and fences against what they call irregular migration. Using EU funds for border fences is especially divisive.
I think migration and asylum policy remains a very tricky issue within the EU, with the EU witnessing its biggest migration and asylum crisis since World War II.
Pauline Véron is a policy advisor at the European Centre for Development Policy Management, a Netherlands-based think tank. She says even as many Europeans continue welcoming Ukrainian refugees, they are feeling rising angst about migration from Africa and elsewhere. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And as Russia's targeted attacks on the Ukrainian energy infrastructure continue, Ukraine is forced to rethink its energy future. While inventing ways to quickly restore and improve the resilience of its energy system, Ukraine is also looking for green energy solutions. Anna Chanikova has the story from Irpin, one of the hardest hit areas of the Kyiv region.
For months, the Ukrainian energy system has been the target of Russian attacks that leave homes, schools, and hospitals in the dark, sometimes for days at a time. This is encouraging Ukrainians not only to find unconventional ways to quickly rebuild energy facilities, but to consider possible alternative energy sources. School in Irpin is the first to get its own solar power station, thanks to an initiative of the non-profit Energy Act for Ukraine Foundation and the support of international donors. Yuliana Onishuk, foundation founder and CEO, explained that the station consists of solar panels, inverters, and a system that allows the school to store solar energy and use it during power outages. Ivan Ptashnik is head of the Mriya school.
Our main aim was to ensure that the system storages are always fulfilled with electricity. In order to ensure that, we developed a technical solution that foresees that if we have a sunny day, the electricity that will be generated from the solar power plant will go to storage systems in order to fulfill them. It's a priority number one.
The station's battery storage system can provide the school with a power supply for up to 4 hours. The school's principal explains that the solar power station will allow schools to operate using power that is cheaper and greener than that provided by gasoline generators.
This is a breakthrough for education, that we simply become energy independent.
For Ukraine, 1 year into Russia's full-scale assault, energy security is one of its main priorities. The foundation plans to install similar solutions in a total of 100 schools and medical institutions across the country. 1 year on, the war has created many new challenges that Ukrainians face daily. But it has also created an environment for rapid innovation that is key to survival. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Irpin, Ukraine.
Thank you, Anna. And the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has appealed for more aid to help Ethiopia's war-displaced, saying they only received part of last year's needed funds. Maya Masekeo reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says only half of the required funding for Ethiopia was met last year and has appealed for the international community to step up its support. The High Commissioner says addressing the needs of the Ukrainian people affected by Russia's invasion must not mean the needs of the rest of the world are to be neglected.
Last year, UNHCR's program, I'm only talking about UNHCR's program in Ethiopia, were only half funded. This is not acceptable. And I hope that this year, after the peace agreement, that there will be more attention and more support given to our programs.
During his first visit to Ethiopia since the November peace deal was reached between Ethiopian Federal Forces and the TPLF, the High Commissioner visited Mekele, the capital of Tigray region, where he met with people displaced by the two-year war.
I want to make a strong appeal that here, where there is an opening created by the peace process, it is absolutely important that all necessary resources are mobilized to sustain that peace agreement.
The High Commissioner also visited the new refugee site in Alamwach in the Amhara region, which shelters 22,000 Eritreans.
I think there's quite a lot of work that we need to do on that particular site to make living conditions better. We had quite a good discussion with the representative of the refugees. We also have to recognize that Eritreans have gone through a very troubled time.
Prior to the start of the war in Ethiopia, about 20,000 Eritrean refugees were sheltered in camps in Tigray. Both camps were destroyed when they came under attack during the war. The High Commissioner also raised the importance of supporting the UN's work in Ethiopia in recognition of Ethiopia hosting the third largest number of refugees in the world with 880,000 people. A majority of those refugees are South Sudanese, followed by Somalis and Eritreans. Maya Msikir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In other news, thousands of workers in Colombo, Sri Lanka, led by nearly 40 trade unions of the essential services, gathered across the capital city on Wednesday to protest the recent rise in taxes amid high inflation. Sri Lanka needs to raise taxes to boost government's revenue to 11.3% of the GDP this year from 8.3% in 2022 in order to get International Monetary Fund. As a result, authorities introduced new income taxes in January for professionals, ranging from 12.5% to more than 36%. President Ranil Wickremesinghe, who took office in January after Gotabaya Rajapakse was ousted in a popular uprising, told Parliament he could see a way out of the troubles as he worked through economic reforms to seal the deal with the IMF. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Nigerians will vote on February 25th to choose their next president, along with lawmakers in the House and Senate chambers. Experts weigh in on the electoral dynamics and their implications for security, the economy and Nigeria's foreign policy. VOA's Mariama Diallo has the story.
There are 18 candidates vying for the presidency in Nigeria. Among the main contenders are Bola Tinubu from the ruling All Progressives Congress, APC, and Atiku Abubakar of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP. But something is different this time, says Vanda Felbab Brown, co-director of the Brookings Institution's Africa Security Initiative, who convened a panel discussion on Tuesday.
In addition to the representatives of APC and PDP, there are others running. Among them is Peter Obi, the former governor of Anambra State, representing the Labour Party, and Rabiu Musa Kwankwaso, former governor of Kano and former federal minister of defense of the New Nigeria's People's Party. So this election is more competitive than has been the case, and certainly generating a lot of excitement just in terms of the electoral dynamics.
Each candidate has a vision for Africa's biggest economy and most populous nation. Tinubu, 70, says he will create wealth for the country.
We will turn Nigeria hand. It will be our Eldorado.
Abubakar, 76, who lost to President Muhammadu Buhari in the 2019 elections, has a message of inclusion. Buhari is stepping down after two terms.
Every part of this country will be given a sense of belonging. No part will be sidelined
No part will be marginalized.
For Obi, 61, it's time to build a new Nigeria that's more attractive to its people.
Those who left, even the young people who are today living, they'll come back. We want to bring them back. Nigerians are prepared to come back if they can find that they have a country to go back to.
Obi has generated buzz among young Nigerians, panelists said. Matthew Page is associate fellow at Chatham House. He's also the author of the book, Nigeria, What Everyone Needs to Know.
The election is a bit of a test of strength for the country's kleptocratic ruling class. I think we're all watching, especially in light of Peter Obi's candidacy, to see if the country's sort of powerful ruling elites who have really, regardless of their party, maintained their grip on the political system in Nigeria now since 1999, will they retrench decisively and maintain their hold on the system? Or will they face a strong challenge from candidates that enjoy the support of younger Nigerians?
According to the Electoral Commission, 93 million people have registered to vote, and voters age 18 to 34 make up about 40% of that total, said Cynthia Mbamalu, Director of Programs for YAGA Africa. Page says on the economy, Nigeria must pursue economic and fiscal policies that unleash the country's human and economic potential.
Nigeria now is very much trapped in a problematic cycle of high inflation, currency devaluation and manipulation, wasteful spending, and irresponsible borrowing. Now, while Nigeria's debt-to-GDP ratio remains relatively low, at the same time, its debt servicing costs are incredibly high. So, for example, in its 2023 budget, debt servicing costs will account for 30% of the government's budget.
Other issues Nigeria faces, the panelists said, include crime, corruption, climate change, and the need for good governance. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
A serpent-like robot designed by students from Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts, could revolutionize how NASA astronauts explore the lunar surface. VOA's Ken Farbaugh has more.
Northeastern University student Andre Neto Caetano watched NASA's Artemis 1 launch from Kennedy Space Center in Florida live on a device in the lobby of a hotel across the country in California.
I just kind of had like a, not a flashback, but a flash forward, I guess, of seeing maybe Artemis 4 or something, and Cobra is like part of the payload and it's being deployed on the moon to do what it was meant to do.
Artemis 1 launched the night before Caetano and his team presented their crater-observing bio-inspired rolling articulator, or Cobra, rover project in NASA's 2022 Breakthrough Innovative and Game-Changing, or Big Idea Challenge. The big challenge for Caetano's team was impressing judges assembled in the remote California desert. A skepticism born from the simplicity of their design.
A robot that moves like a snake, and then the head and the tail connect, and it just rolls.
NASA's Big Idea Challenge and the associated prize money prompted teams of college students to develop solutions for the agency's goals in the upcoming Artemis missions to the moon. Northeastern's Cobra can uniquely move through fine desert sand, similar to the dust or regolith of the lunar surface, to probe the landscape for interesting features, including ice and water. Professor Ali Reza Ramazani advises Northeastern University's team developing Cobra and is experienced in designing robots that mimic real organisms.
So with like him building like a robot dog and a robot bat and things like that, we knew we wanted to kind of have some bio inspiration in our projects.
Ramazani hoped Cobra's simple snake design could win over judges in NASA's competition.
Our robot sort of tumbled 80, 90 feet down this hill and sort of, that impressed the judges. We did this with minimum energy consumption and within like 10, 15 seconds.
Cobra is cost effective too.
Perhaps if you want to have a space worthy platform, is going to be in the order of like $100,000, $200,000. You can have many of these systems.
The Northeastern team's November demonstration of Cobra in the California desert put to rest any lingering skepticism, sending them to the top of NASA's 2022 Big Idea competition, and hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, to the top of NASA's SLS rocket system on its way to the moon. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago.
This is Science in a Minute.
Jupiter has pulled ahead of Saturn for having the most orbiting moons.
Saturn, with 83 moons, held that title until now. Scott Shepard, a scientist from the Carnegie Institution for Science, and his team have discovered and confirmed 12 new moons orbiting Jupiter, bringing its total to 92. Shepard emailed me about these new discoveries and says that the new Jovian moons were spotted while he and his team were searching for new outer solar system planets beyond Pluto. He says that it takes about a year of observations to confirm the discoveries, and more Jupiter moons will be announced in autumn 2023 when confirming observations are completed. Shepard added that his team is also tracking new moons of Saturn. So the competition continues. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. On this U.S. Politics edition, the State of the Union, President Joe Biden delivers his annual address to a less welcoming Congress this year since the lower chamber is dominated by opposition Republicans. Nonetheless, Biden will tout his many legislative and foreign policy achievements over the past 2 years and likely set the stage for his re-election in 2024. The State of the Union next on Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Digital technologies have the potential to accelerate economic growth, to promote openness, transparency, and access to information, and to advance peace and security. But they can also be and are abused by repressive governments in their efforts to control populations, to stifle dissent, to throttle the flow of information and disseminate disinformation, and to keep tabs on opposing voices and censor them. That is why the Freedom Online Coalition was established in 2011 at the initiative of the Dutch Foreign Ministry. Today, the coalition has 35 members across 5 continents. The Freedom Online Coalition is the only international group of countries specifically dedicated to supporting and advancing respect for human rights online and in digital contexts, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
Its purpose is to protect the promise of an internet as an open, interoperable, secure, and reliable global network of networks, and to ensure that the same human rights that people have offline are protected online.
This year, the United States assumed leadership of the Freedom Online Coalition. As the United States assumes the chair of this group for the first time since its creation in 2011, we're focused on making the coalition even more effective in advancing the promise of the internet and mitigating its perils, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
First, we'll stay focused on the coalition's core mission of protecting fundamental freedoms, including through working with like-minded governments, civil society groups, tech companies, and citizens to counter disruptions to internet access.
Second, we will stand up to and build resilience against the misuse of digital technologies and digital repression, said Secretary Blinken. Our governments can take steps to put in place guardrails that protect human rights when governments use surveillance technologies.
Third, we'll work to shape the norms and rules around emerging technologies, such as the responsible development and use of artificial intelligence, and enforce those that already exist. Fourth, we'll continue to strengthen digital inclusion and promote safe online spaces, particularly for women and girls, LGBTQI+ people, ethnic, racial, and religious minorities, people with disabilities, and other marginalized groups.
We find ourselves at a defining moment for the future of the internet since its creation, said Secretary Blinken. We'll act with urgency and purpose, because if we don't shape the future of the internet in a way that aligns with our values, autocratic countries will.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.